Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company Limited H1 FY2023 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. N.S. Kannan, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Tanvi. Good evening to all of you, and welcome to the results call of ICICI Prudential Life Insurance Company for the half year ended September 30 of financial year 2023. I have several of my senior colleagues with me on the call. Satyan Jambunathan, CFO, Deepak Kinger, who is responsible for audit, legal, risk and compliance departments, Manish Kumar, who manages our investments, Souvik Jash, appointed actuary, Dhiren Salian, Deputy CFO, and Dheeraj Chugha from the investor relations team. Let me start by talking about a few developments during the quarter before I move on to our performance. First, I'm pleased to inform you that the members of the company have approved the item of special business pertaining to the appointment of Mr. Benjamin Bulmer as the Non-Executive Director of the company, nominated by Prudential Corporation Holdings Limited with effect from July 27, 2022, in place of Mr. Wilfred Blackburn by way of an ordinary resolution through postal ballot. Second, I would also like to share that ICRA, a domestic credit rating agency, has reaffirmed the long-term rating for our subordinated debt program as ICRA AAA. The outlook on the long-term rating is also stable. The third development on the regulatory front, in line with IRDA's vision that by the year 2047, which happens to be the centenary year of India's independence, every Indian should have life cover and every family should have health cover and old age security. On this vision, the authority has taken several measures with a clear focus on increasing insurance penetration in the country and ease of doing business for companies like us. I would like to talk about some of these measures. IRDA formed a Regulatory Review Committee, RRC, comprising 22 members to examine the regulatory framework comprehensively. The Regulation Review Committee has been entrusted with the task of streamlining and recommending simplified regulations which are principles-based with a view to enhance ease of doing business and making the regulatory regime at par with global standards. Further, the regulator has proposed the formation of Bima Sugam, an all-in-one digital platform for solicitation, servicing, and claims. We believe that this would be a game changer and possibly the UPI moment for the insurance industry. Over time, we expect this unified platform to be used by the large number of customers to fulfill all their insurance needs, as also by insurers as well as intermediaries, in conjunction with other market participants such as insurance repositories and also connectivity to external databases and ecosystems. We welcome the relaxations provided by the regulator with respect to allowing certain categories of products to be launched through the use and file approach, relaxation of investment norms, and ease of documentation for purchase of immediate annuity products. Further, a series of exposure drafts have been released by the regulator in the areas of distribution, expenses of management, other forms of capital, dematerialization of insurance policies. We believe that these regulatory reforms will structurally and functionally reform the sector and boost insurance growth and development while enhancing ease of doing business for the insurance industry. The fourth development during this period is about ESG. As briefed earlier, we had adopted the ESG framework in the year 2020. To sharpen our existing board oversight on ESG, the board has enhanced the terms of reference of the CSR committee of the board to also include oversight of our sustainability agenda. The committee has accordingly been renamed as the Board Sustainability and CSR Committee. As a result, we now have a formal structure with the board overseeing the ESG matters, the Board Sustainability and CSR Committee focusing on monitoring ESG initiatives and disclosures, and the Executive Sustainability Steering Committee driving the ESG agenda within the organization. I would like to here reaffirm our commitment to create a culture that embraces sustainability. I'm also happy to state that we continue to be the best ranked Indian insurer based on reports by major ESG rating agencies. I'll now move on to the performance of the company for the quarter. Our four key strategic elements, that is premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity enhancement, continue to guide us towards our objective of growing the absolute value of new business, while ensuring all the times that our customer is at the core of everything we do. I'll summarize our performance on the four P's through slides 5 to 9 of our presentation, which is loaded, and then conclude with a commentary on VNB. Satyan will then be taking you through the performance in detail. So let me start with the first P of our strategic elements, which is premium growth. Our annualized premium equivalent APE grew sequentially by 32% for the second quarter of this fiscal. We ended the first half of the year at an APE of 35.19 billion rupees with a 10% year-on-year growth and the new business premium of 73.59 billion rupees with a 14% year-on-year growth. As you can see in slide number 6 of the presentation, for H1 of FY2023, the contribution to APE from linked products stood at 41%, non-linked savings at 28%, protection at 20%, annuity at 7%, and the balance 4% came from group savings. We would like to highlight that this quarter onwards, we have started disclosing the distribution mix based on retail APE. The retail distribution mix of the first half of this fiscal APE is 40% from bank assurance channel, 31% from agency channel, 15% from direct business, and balance from other partnerships at 14%. Here, our focus is on investment in building existing channels and also widening the distribution to maintain the diversified distribution mix. Further, we believe that the recent exposure draft, wherein a corporate agent can tie up with up to 9 insurers instead of 3 now, if implemented, we believe that this will provide us a great opportunity to expand our distribution network further. We believe that our diversification agenda on both the product and the distribution mix is on track, thereby enabling us to manage the impact of external developments and respond to the changing consumer preferences and behavior in an agile manner. Moving on to the second P of protection business, which is presented on slide 7, the total protection APE is at 7.1 billion rupees in the first half of this current fiscal, resulting in an increase in the protection mix from 17% for the whole of last fiscal to 20% for the first half of this fiscal. Protection APE has continued to grow in both the quarters of fiscal year 2023. The growth was 22%, if you'll remember, in the first quarter on a year-on-year basis, which has accelerated to 35% year-on-year growth in the second quarter, resulting in a 29% year-on-year growth in the first half. I would like to highlight that based on the total new business sum assured, our market share has increased from 13.4% for financial year 2022 to 15.7% in H1 FY2023. With this, we continue to hold on to our market leadership in terms of sum assured, new business sum assured in the private sector. We continue to take a risk-calibrated approach to underwriting, and our practices are commensurate with the prices offered, including emphasizing sourcing of preferred customer profiles. Further, we have been leveraging the opportunity in the group protection business even as we seek to revive the retail protection business. On the third P of persistency presented in slide 8, we continue to see significant improvement across cohorts. Our 13-month persistency ratio has increased by 130 basis points from 84.6% at March 2022 to 85.9% at September 2022. Similarly, our 49-month persistency ratio has increased by 200 basis points from 63.4 at March 2022 to 65.4 as of September 2022. Moving on to the fourth P of productivity, which is presented in slide 9, our total expenses grew by 20.9% year-on-year for the first half of the current fiscal. The absolute expenses are of course higher as compared to the same period last year because we have been investing in building for future growth. Alongside our 4P strategy framework, we continue to maintain a resilient balance sheet, as we have presented in slide number 10 of our presentation. We have evaluated the insurance risks and the emerging mortality experience, and this is within our expectation, and we will continue to monitor it closely as we go forward as well. We received the COVID-19 claims net of reinsurance of 272 million rupees for the first half of current fiscal, out of which 26 million rupees were pertaining to COVID-19 deaths in the first half of the current fiscal. Thus, we have released the COVID-19 provisions which we were carrying till the last quarter. Our solvency ratio continues to be strong at 200.7% as of September 2022, as compared to the regulatory threshold of 150%. Our assets under management AUM stood at ₹2.443 trillion at September 2022. On credit risk, only 0.3% of our fixed income portfolio is invested in instruments rated below AA, and we continue to maintain a track record of not having a single NPA since inception. Of our total liabilities, non-par guaranteed return products comprise about 2.8%, while 77.2% liabilities are primarily linked to market performance. We continue to closely monitor our liquidity and ALM positions, and we have no issues to report. Moving on to value of new business VNB, as a result of the above drivers, the VNB for H1 FY2023 was 10.92 billion rupees, a growth of 25.1% over the corresponding period last year. Given our APE of rupees 35.19 billion, the resultant VNB margin was 31% for H1 financial year 2023, as compared to 28% for the whole of last fiscal and 27.3% in the first half of the last financial year. While this increase in VNB margin is primarily on account of shift in underlying product mix, we on our side continue to focus on growth in absolute VNB. Before I hand over to Satyan to talk us through some of the details, I would like to maintain that we continue to maintain our objective of doubling financial year 19 VNB by the end of this financial year, which requires a VNB growth rate of around 23% for the whole of this financial year over the last financial year VNB. With a VNB growth of 25.1% for the first half and with a favorable premium base for the coming months from here on, we believe that we are on track to achieve this aspiration. Our primary objective is to outperform the industry on VNB growth over the medium term. Towards this, we believe all necessary levers are available with us. With this, I thank you all for joining the call, and I'm handing over the call to Satyan to take us through the performance of the company in detail.
Thank you, Kannan. Good evening. Our primary focus continues to be to grow the absolute value of new business through the 4P strategy of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity improvement. On the first element of premium growth, we continue to leverage on our innovative and comprehensive suite of products, distribution strength, robust technology, and strong risk management architecture. We have recently launched ICICI Pru Sukh Samriddhi, a participating savings product, to enhance our offering in the category. Coming to product performance on slide 15, you will note that we have registered a strong growth in the non-linked savings, protection, and annuity segments, which have contributed to our APE growth of 10% year-on-year for H1 FY2023. With an APE of 2.33 billion and a 69% year-on-year growth in H1 FY23, we were one of the largest pension and annuity providers in the market. The protection and annuity business now contributes approximately 50% of the total new business received premium. Our focus has been to sustain growth in the annuity line of business by driving synergy between our company and our subsidiary, ICICI Prudential Pension Fund Management Company. The AUM managed by the PFM has increased by 36% over September 2021 to $132.44 billion at September 2022. The PFM has a market share of 14.8% in the private sector AUM at September 30th, 2022. Moving on to distribution on slide 17, a well-diversified distribution selling comprehensive products suited to customer needs has been our goal. Strengthening the existing network and widening distribution with new partnerships has been one of our key focus areas. During the half year, we have added over 15,000 new agents, 3 new banks, and 44 non-bank partnerships. As we stand today, we also leverage more than 13,000 branch network of our partners for the distribution of our insurance products. Coming to the performance of these distribution channels on slide 18, you will note that we have witnessed growth across most channels. The second element of protection growth on slide 20, with an APE of Rs. 7.10 billion, the protection segment saw a growth of 29.1% over H1 FY2022. In this segment, we continue to take advantage of the opportunity available in the group business, specifically on group credit life products. We continue to witness significant demand for the group protection products, especially now with the pricing recalibrated closer to the pre-COVID-19 levels. The retail protection growth, though challenged on a year-on-year basis, has broadly stabilized on a sequential basis. We have also been encouraging rider attachment on our savings products and term products. The term product with return of premium that we had launched last year continues to contribute about 15 to 20% of the retail protection portfolio. This is a category creation exercise which we believe will take time to develop. With all these initiatives, our total new business sum assured stood at 4.8 trillion for H1 FY2023, a growth of 42.3% year on year. We have retained market leadership in the private market space with a sum assured market share of 15.7% in FY2023. The third element of persistency on slide 22. We continue to have a strong focus on improving the quality of business and customer retention, which is reflected across all cohorts. There has been a significant improvement across all cohorts in the last 1 year, with our 13th month and 49th month persistency ratios improving to 85.9% and 65.4% respectively at September 2022. The fourth element of productivity on slide 24, our overall cost to total weighted received premium ratio stood at 21.6% and the cost to TWRP ratio for the savings business at 14.4% and the cost to average AUM at 2.2% for H1 FY2023. During the COVID affected year, we had curtailed some of our discretionary expenses. This year, we have started to see a normalization of such spends. In addition, we are also investing in building blocks to enable future sustainable growth. In any case, under the Indian Embedded Value Principles, VNB is computed after considering all expenses during the year. For increased productivity, we continue to invest in technology, which is central to our strategy, thereby aiding us to provide better value to our customers. Specifically on slide 40, we have detailed some of the key initiatives undertaken in H1 FY2023. We are happy to report that we are now a financial information user and a financial information provider in the account aggregator ecosystem. We believe this will ease the entire documentation and verification process for customers going forward. The usage of data excellence at every phase of our customer journey has also been detailed on slide 41. The outcome of our focus on these four P's, as you may see on slide 25, has resulted in the VNB of Rs. 10.92 billion for H1 FY2023, a growth of 25.1% over H1 FY2022. Given our APE of 35.19 billion, the resultant VNB margin was 31% for H1 FY2023 as compared to 27.3% in H1 FY2022 and 28% in FY2022. While this increase in VNB is primarily on account of shift in underlying product mix, we continue to focus on absolute VNB growth, which is our stated objective. As the product mix evolves over the rest of the year, the VNB margin is expected to move in line with the underlying product mix. Coming to the financial metrics, our profit after tax for H1 FY2023 was 3.55 billion compared to 2.59 billion in H1 FY2022, primarily on account of significantly lower COVID-19 claims. Our value of in-force business, or VIF, grew by 16.4% year-on-year and stood at 247.97 billion at September 2022. The adjusted net worth reflects the mark-to-market impact on the investment portfolio. The embedded value grew by 8.1% and stood at 326.48 billion at September 2022. To summarize, we continue to monitor ourselves on the 4P framework of premium growth, protection business growth, persistency improvement, and productivity improvement. Our performance on these dimensions is what we expect to feed into our objective of doubling the FY2019 VNB in the financial year, in this financial year, and VNB growth over time. Thank you. We are now happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, you may enter star and one to ask a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Swarnabha Mukherjee from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Swarnabha.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, a couple of questions. First one on the ROP product. I was looking at the run rate since the last three quarters that the product has been, you know, been launched. The run rate remains fairly same across quarter in the absolute number. I understand that 4Q was of course a very small period in which the product was launched. Now I wanted to understand you, as you mentioned, it's a category creation exercise and it will take time, but if you could throw some color on what are the efforts that are being put in and if there are any kind of challenges that you are seeing, maybe from the channel side or maybe from, you know, what the customer is asking for in the product, and whether if there is any supply side issue also in this, like we have seen in the retail protection side. That will be my first question, sir.
Sure, Swarnabha. You're right. It has been consistent at 15%-20% over the past three quarters since we have launched it. As you mentioned, it is a category creation. The point really is that the customer segment which is choosing this product is a more mass-oriented customer segment, and therefore for this to continue growing, it will have to be based on a suitable distribution customer segment match. Typically, distribution channels which have a strength in more mass-oriented customers, such as agencies or small finance bank and some other distribution partners who have access to that customer segment, are what will popularize this. We don't see any supply side issues in this. These products are priced with an appropriate level of mortality, and therefore I don't expect that to be a challenge. I think it is contributing meaningfully even now, in that we are not out of line with the rest of the market, with the exception of one company. I do think that it will take a period of time before it becomes a larger mix, but we are quite happy with the way that this business is progressing.
Just to add to that, I would only say that we would be more focused on growing the retail protection pie together, and we are quite happy if ROP continues to stay at 15 to 20%. That we are quite okay with that outcome. The focus is more on growing the entire pie rather than focusing on ROP or non-ROP.
Okay, sir, that's helpful. Any comment on the pure term side? What are you seeing, and should we expect any growth? Any movement this year?
On the retail protection, so year-on-year basis, obviously you would have seen that it is challenged, because that's also looking, overall numbers are also still decline on retail protection. Of course, we give out the numbers only by the end of the year in terms of split between retail and group. But I can say that year-on-year declines have been coming down on retail protection. That's one trend I can point out towards. And the second trend is that on a sequential basis, when I look at, it has been stable. So that is the two trends I can tell you. Demand side, we are not seeing any lack of demand. Demand continues to be good, stable for these products. And if I really look at the underwriting side, the processes are stabilized and the pricing is also stabilized. So those are the indications I can give you in terms of a sequential stabilization, stabilization of processes, and stabilization of pricing. And that is what we are seeing with a lot of, lot of positive outlook in this segment as we move forward. Now, if you look at the customer protection from a demand perspective, why I say that the demand is intact is because we are seeing a rider attachment increase. If I look at the ULIPs, the rider attachment has gone up to about 45% plus in the recent month. If you look at the rider attachment in term, that has also gone up. So these are the things which give me an indication that the protection demand is quite intact amongst the consumers. Now, to answer your question on when it will really look up, I think the growth will come back in the second half of the year. That is what we believe. Because when you look at the last year, the second half things have started plateauing and actually started coming down. And slowly we are clawing our way back in terms of a sequential stabilization now, and slowly a sequential improvement, which in the second half we are hoping that will result in the year-on-year growth also. This is the color I can give you on pure term on the retail side. On the other side, pure term on the group side, that is growing quite well. There have been some news reports about the pricing and all that, but we believe that the employer-employee and the other groups do have a lot of need for the group term cover. There is a continuous movement towards increasing the employee coverage or the coverage per employee, and we are one of the leaders when it comes to this segment. So that is also helping us to continue to show a robust growth on the group segment as well. So this is the color I can give you. So the sense is that by the time when we see any plateau on the group side, the retail would have got stabilized, and then we'll come to help us on the growth of overall protection.
Sure, sir. That's very helpful. A couple of quick questions on the channel side. First, on the non-ICICI banks. So that segment has been growing very strongly. If you could give some details on, what would be the product mix difference between, non-ICICI bank and ICICI bank for us to gauge, how this growth can pan out going ahead.
If you really look at ICICI bank first, as we have always told you, from a customer franchise perspective, they have not been selling any non-linked products in the savings side. So that strategy sort of continues. So the focus of the channel on ICICI Bank, just to give you a color, continues to be on protection. And of course, given that in general we are seeing the supply side constraints on protection, same as ICICI Bank and the rest of the channels as well, same as us in the industry as well. Given that, it has been a bit slow, but given that the environment is improving, and as I said earlier, things have been stabilizing on the retail protection, we should expect the growth to happen in ICICI Bank protection. On annuity, ICICI Bank continues to drive growth. On linked, of course, since they don't distribute non-linked, on linked, given the environment and the market conditions, that has been a decline in ICICI Bank, because they don't sell any traditional products to offset the decline in the ULIP. So this is as far as ICICI Bank is concerned. but we are happy to look at protection and annuity as two key segments for growth in ICICI Bank. Now you talked about the other thing. First, let me talk about other banks. So wherever we have tied up with the banks in the last couple of years, we continue to see momentum in those banks, and those banks are very much focused on the fee income arising out of insurance, and that is something we are leveraging as well. So that part is moving, and you have seen in our retail distribution, other banks other than ICICI contributing to about 17% of our numbers, 17% of our business. So this is, that itself is testimony to how things have been moving on the non-banks. And we have added three more bank partners. Of course, these are all cooperative and small banks. That's what we have added, and that is something which we are having. Then, as I said in my opening remarks, the exposure draft, the IRDA says that corporate agent can tie up with 9 life insurers instead of 3. I see it as a great opportunity because we are used to not just working with ICICI Bank, but also working with 30 banks now. So that itself should give us a good entry into this new opportunity. And that is something we will be, in a focused manner, we will be going. Now you asked about the products in the other than ICICI Bank segment. We have really left it to the partners. You know, if you really ask me, some of the smaller banks really ask us to do only traditional products and not so much on unit-linked products. And that is something we are happy to give it to them. If you look at the agency side, agency also used to be skewed 4 years back towards ULIP. But agency now is becoming something like a one-third in terms of traditional protection annuity and the other products. So because, and we believe that it is the right match because the customer segments they cater to, there would be a lot of mass and mass affluent kind of segments where this kind of a product mix is probably a better mix compared to a highly skewed ULIP product mix. So to answer your question, yes, the channel by channel, we do have the mix which we have left it to the respective bank partners or the other partners, and we will take the outcome as it comes. That has been our approach. For example, if you look at our slide 17, we have talked about what has been our strategy in each of the segments. If you look at the agency as an example, their protection and annuity is 31%, non-linked saving is 35%, and linked is 34%. So if you look at the bank assurance, protection annuity mix is 42%. So this is, and then partnership distribution, which is corporate agents and brokers, we have product and the protection and annuity mix of 28% and non-linked savings of 61%. So these are all the outcomes based on the customer segments the channels are catering to and the channel preferences. So that is the way we would like to. And we have come to a situation today as a company that we are a 40% ULIP and 20% protection, and the balance constituting traditional and other products, that we are completely neutral, and we are very happy to cater to the customer and the channel requirements in terms of product mix.
Sure, sir. And
thank
in
you.
Terms of the
sorry to interrupt, sir. So I would request you to please come back.
I'll come back.
Yes. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address the questions from all participants, we request you to limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have any further questions, you may join the queue back. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, Avinash.
Yeah. Hi, Karan. A couple of questions. Going to the accounting profit or surplus generation, I would just need your help. I can see, if I am looking YOY for the quarter, the big variance has come in 3 parts. Shareholder account understood how the markets were, so realized gains, I understand. Non-par life, again, because you have seen a strong growth, so of course there will be a strain, or it will have a negative surplus. Another big swing that is in the non-par annuity surplus. Now, the last 2 quarters negative, I understand. What was, if you can help me, why it was such a big positive number last year, the same quarter? So, why there is such a swing when it comes to surplus generation, your annuity, YOY? This is because that is the thing that is driving kind of a YOY surplus lower. So, if you can help me, that's the first question.
So, Avinash, the strain under the annuity portfolio is a function of mix between single pay and regular pay, and also a function of the tenure of the deferral period for annuity. So for every period, the annuity strain need not be the same. We recently launched a regular pay deferred annuity, which is much more longer term. So the strain profile for the annuity business this year is definitely different from what it was in the past years.
Okay. And last year, it was a big positive number. It had generated surplus. Was some impact, I mean, based on the mortality or something? I mean, just I'm trying to understand. Last year, like
No mortality. Last year, in the same period, there may also have been some realized investment income on the fixed income portfolio that may have caused it. But otherwise, there is nothing unusual that is happening on those portfolios. It's really a function of the underlying mix of what we are selling.
Okay. The second question now, of course, in annual report, the details of your hedging is disclosed. Just, I mean, on incremental basis in the first half from March 22 to now, what would have been, the MTM movement in your FRA and what that its impact on your solvency and net worth, if you can help me first half?
MTM on FRA has had no impact on solvency because in aggregate, the equity portfolio plus the FRA portfolio MTM is net positive. So there is no impact on solvency. You can't take credit for positive. Only if it is in aggregate negative will you take a hit from a solvency point of view. So there is no impact. In fact, the MTM has come down quite sharply at the end of this quarter than it was at the end of the last quarter. Those numbers are not specifically publicly disclosed, but I can confirm no adverse or positive impact on solvency and MTM impact substantially lower now than it has been at the end of the last two quarters.
Okay. So I mean, your equity MTM and FRA hedging MTM both put together, I mean, if they are negative, then only you have a hit on solvency. I mean, of course, you cannot take positive. But kind of, if you are getting, so if you are getting some negative on FRA and some positive in equity, I mean, they kind of cancel each other. Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. Lastly, I mean, again, this is a very minor thing. There's some kind of a negative, in your revaluation reserve in the property side. Is it because of some sale or like some property valuation has certain investment property has come down?
So you're talking about negative on?
No, some decline. If I look at sequentially, your revaluation reserve in property has come down slightly. Of course, a very minor number, but typically, I mean, so is it some kind of sale of property or is it like a usual revaluation?
No, it's just a usual revaluation. We get it done once a year. You won't have any change in this period. You would have had it at the end of last year. This period, the only thing that would have happened on property would be that we moved one piece of our property from the par pension fund to par life fund. So to that extent, it may be sitting in a different place, but there is no revaluation which has happened this quarter. That typically happens only at 31st March.
Thank you. I will come back to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Congratulations for a good set of numbers, sir. I had a question on the new banking, new bank partner that you've had.
Thank you, Shreya Shivani. There is some disturbance coming from your connection.
Okay, one second. Is it better now?
You seem to be in a windy place. It's better. Please go ahead. Hi.
Hi. So I just wanted clarification on the three new bank partners you've added. Just a bit of an understanding on how many bank partners you look to add. These new bank partners, I just heard they are small banks, I believe. Are you like the number one, two, third insurer for them? So some more flavor around these new bank partners is my first question. And my second question is any APE guidance that you have for the full year of this year?
So Shreya, these three partners actually got added in the first quarter, so they are in the first half year. In this quarter, we haven't added anybody new. These are very small, so it doesn't really matter whether we have how much share of shop we have. But the point really is that all of these partners put together now are building into a reasonable scale. And I think that's the more important part that we tend to focus on. With now 17% of the retail APE coming from the non-primary bank partnership that we have developed. So to that extent, these are not big. Let's see going forward whether we are able to get more or not. Without an objective, we would like as many as people would like to have us. But it's really a long gestation period. We keep working and pitching with various potential bank partners to establish our credentials. And if it comes through, it should be positive. APE guidance for the year, we have not given any APE guidance. We are still holding on to our expectation of the 23% VNB growth. We have said this in the past. Once upon a time, we would have to depend on a 20% APE growth to get to that VNB growth. But now the degrees of freedom are many more given the diversification in products. So even if the APE growth is either faster than what it was for H1 or even a little slower than what it was for H1, we still feel that we have a fair shot at getting to the objective.
Got it. Understood. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Dev.
The next question is from the line of Sanket Gora from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, Sanket.
Just wanted to say that ICICI, non-ICICI bank growth, which was very strong, around 69% in first quarter, I assume it should be because of a low base in the previous quarter, but it seems to have moderated a bit to 13% in second quarter. Though one-ish numbers look very strong, but second quarter looks to be a little moderating and the divergence. It is converging closer to the overall APE growth of the company. And if I look at similarly to the other channels like agency and direct, they also have not done that well relatively, given the partnership channels have done well. So just wanted to understand anything to read why non-ICICI bank channels have not grown to the expectation or again the same point that the market share potential which we had a low hanging fruit, we have reached it and incrementally it is more a channel growth.
So Sanket, the way I would look at it is this, I'll maybe talk about the agency and direct first before I get there. Agency had a very, very strong base in Q2 of last year. And some of that is what we are seeing come through as a base effect. Also in agency, you would have noticed that one third of the business is unit linked. To the extent that unit linked has been a bit more of a struggle in the current quarter, that is an impact which has happened. As we get to the next two quarters, typically both December and March tend to be fairly peak periods for agency. So we have no concerns about the trajectory for growth for agency into the next two quarters. Direct to customer for us is predominantly the upsell channel executed by our proprietary sales force. Now this is executed on existing customers. Given that our existing customers are predominantly unit linked oriented, this channel has seen the same impact that we have seen for the unit linked category as a whole, and that's why for the quarter, it was relatively slow. As we go into the next two quarters, we think that should not, that should again self-correct over a period of time. So again, from a direct point of view, while the number does seem modest, we are not concerned in any material fashion about the trajectory. Banks other than ICICI Bank, I mean, from a 70-80% growth in the past, I would hesitate to say that it will not moderate, that it will moderate. But those are periods of time that will happen. I don't think one should read too much into what happens in a month or what happens in a quarter. This is a channel which has been growing at a fairly robust pace. And if you look at even the wider industry context, this is a segment which has been doing as well as the rest of the industry as well. So from a growth point of view, I would actually say that the base effect is going to be an important determinant through these quarters. Like Kannan mentioned in his opening comments, Q2 last year was a YOY 35% growth. And eventually Q3 and Q4 last year were 16 and 4% growth. That should be a slightly more benign base when we look at potential growth into the future. So yes, you will always have periods of improving growth or decreasing growth, but I'm not so sure that we can live our life based on what happens on a month-on-month basis.
Got it, Kannan. That's useful. And second thing was just to understand that if I look at our 60-plus month consistency compared to FY22, it has improved very sharply. From 54, it is almost 61. So which means to some extent, can we assume that we have a lever given this is a structural improvement in the improvement in the persistency after 5 years in the mass lapsation assumption after 5 years of completion. Is that a lever substantially available from the full year point of view to further expand the margin?
Yes, Sanket, it may well be a lever when we get to the end of the year, but we would like to assess it when we get there.
Okay. And finally, if you can quantify the MTM impact or negative economic variance number on the embedded value in the 1H number, given the impact on the net worth seems to be around 509 crores. On embedded value, how much it could be?
So, Sanket, we have not disclosed that specifically. We will have to wait for the full year before we disclose all the breakup of movement in embedded value.
Got it. Perfect.
I can only reiterate that the value of in-force has continued to see a very strong growth at 16.5% year on year.
Yeah, got it. Thanks.
That's it for me.
Thanks, Sanket. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ansuman Deep from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So one of my questions was regarding that persistency part. So we have seen a very sharp increase and it could be because of a little bit of lower ULIPs. But regarding our base case assumptions, is there a chance for a positive release and the year end, right? That would be my first question.
So, Anshuman, hi. That's what I confirmed in response to Sanket's question as well. It may well be the case. We'll see where it gets to. Right now, I'm not getting into an explanation of what is causing this. Whatever is the cause of improvement, I will take it happily.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Point well taken. And the second question is more of a thought process in the sense when we started this journey of doubling the VNB, we had a very high protection growth trajectory, and as we moved ahead, and we are almost as you rightly said, we have a great shot of kind of meeting that objective. It has been more towards savings. So if you could just tell us in terms of the strategy of the company, has it absolutely remained same in terms of, like, you know, as per the whatever the customer demand is, or we have done certain special strengths or objectives in meeting a protection, a savings kind of a business? Because we have now a significant portfolio in terms of savings, which has given us a good VNB growth.
So, Anshuman, what we had articulated then was that protection and annuity would be very significant engines for us to grow our VNB. That has not changed at all, and I don't think protection growth has slowed down. If you just look at this year, first quarter protection growth was 22%, second quarter protection growth was 35%. So I know we all get very caught up about retail protection, and in that we miss the fact that the protection business growth is actually not moderated. I think most companies across the world would give an arm and a leg to get a 30% growth in protection over a half year period. So to that extent, I'm absolutely no discomfort with the way the product is moving. What we have added to our armory that we did not have 5 years back is what you mentioned, a wider product suite. Now the benefit of the wider product suite is that it helps us reach many more customers and improve opportunity. So the purpose of widening the product suite was not about improving margins. It was about adding more to growth. It was about getting more customer opportunity that were not choosing the product categories that we were present in earlier. So strategically, nothing has changed. Protection and annuity are very, very core elements in our VNB growth. Savings, whatever is the need of the customer, we are happy to offer. But whatever we offer on savings, risk will be a very big filter. Market risk is not something, or unhedged market risk is not something that we would want to take on a balance sheet.
Great, sir. Yeah, that's very clear, sir. Thank you. That will be all. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, Dipanjan.
Hi, sir. Hope I'm audible. So just maybe you know, following up on one of the points which has been discussed in the call. You know, on your non-ICICI bank channels, bank insurance channels, could you give some color on the counter share that you maintain out there? Or in other words, are you growing faster than the channel from the larger non-ICICI bank partners? And my second question, you know, on similar lines, you mentioned that the proposed circular by IRDAI is to expand open architecture and bank insurance channels is favorable for the company because you get to tie up or you have a chance to tie up with some of the other banker partners. But if you go back and see the history of the events that happened after the first open architecture, there is also a chance that some of the smaller players get to enter the channels or the core channels, ICICI Bank, where you have been going at a faster pace today. So how do you kind of you know, think of it from that perspective also, maybe 4-5 years down the line, given that some of the smaller players also have a relatively diversified product okay today compared to, let's say, what they were having 3-4 years back. So those were the two questions.
On the other bank partnerships, at least what we are seeing is we are more than proportionately contributing to the growth of their business. The objective that we are focusing on is to expand the pie for them. And that eventually is resulting and will continue to result in an increasing share of shop. But our objective is about growing the pie for them. So to that extent, we are very comfortable with the progress and we will continue to work on it. With respect to an open architecture ecosystem, I think eventually every bank will have to make the decision on what they are comfortable with, whether they want to stay with one, stay with three, expand to five, go all the way to nine or whatever else that the regulation may permit. We expect the regulation to be permissive but not mandating. And therefore, to that extent, even if it means in some of the partnerships where we are one of three, if somebody else enters, we would like to think that our brand is still significant enough, our product width is still good enough, and our technology capability is still strong enough for us to maintain our position. And to the extent that some of the banks which may have lesser partners or not opened up, if it gives us an opportunity, we would be happy to take it. But like I said, it does not in any way establish that currently partners who are only distributing for one insurance company, such as an SBI Life or a SBI or a Kotak or an ICICI Bank, will move from one to multi. That is a decision they have to take over a period of time. We don't think there is anything given about what that outcome will be. On balance, we see the opening up to be more positive to us than adverse.
Sure. Thanks for the detailed explanation. Just one small question. We have seen some of the banks increase their term deposit rates over the past, let's say, 1 month to 2 months in a very aggressive manner. And assuming credit growth continues to remain at the levels they are, probably we can expect to see some amount of faster translation of the repo hike rate to the overall term deposit rate. On that feedback, do you see some of the guaranteed return products across the industry seeing some amount of pressure on incremental growth out there, including or maybe the next calendar year?
So, Deepanjan, at one level, I know we all tend to compare bank deposits with guaranteed return products, but all said and done, the products are chalk and cheese. Bank deposits, 75-80% of bank deposits are for a tenor of up to 3 years. All insurance products are 5 years plus. We have life cover, which makes it very different. And overall, when I look at the banking system flows, we are but a small part of it. And if indeed it was so fungible, in the last 2 years, insurance companies should have been growing at 50% per annum. I don't think that's quite what has happened. So yes, at a conceptual level, it seems substitutive. I don't think in actual buying behavior, it is as closely reflected. From our point of view, what's important is that as long as we reflect available yields and as long as people see value in the product, whether adjusted for tax or otherwise, that will keep the demand for the product alive. In case we start seeing a change or a shift in the cycle from high interest rates to lower interest rates, we may well see a shift in product mix from non-par to par. And that's something that we would be very comfortable with. I don't think that would be a problem at all from our point of view. So we wouldn't get too caught up. I don't think an opportunity is created by a product. An opportunity is actually created by a customer opportunity. A product is only a way to leverage that opportunity. So beyond a point, we wouldn't worry too much about these relativities.
Thank you. That's all from my side, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Neeraj Toshniwal from UBS India. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Please go
yeah.
ahead.
Yeah, I saw. So my first question is, we wanted to clarify on the group protection pricing recalibration. So has it been totally accounted for, or we may see some impact coming the subsequent quarters, so that growth might actually, you know, take an impact from the same?
Hi, Neeraj. Group protection at renewal now, we are seeing a pricing which is pre-pandemic level. So every scheme that gets renewed, I would expect at least over the next 3 months or so, assuming that nothing else happens on the pandemic side, will be at a lower pricing pre-pandemic. This has already been the case for the past 3 months or so. So okay. What you're seeing as growth for the quarter is despite or after the change in price that has happened on group term.
So we have added the new partners, or we were able to add... at the mid-level corporates as well, because only the focus only larger corporates, I understand, in terms of pandemic.
Absolutely, you're right. That is what we had said we want to target, and we are doing that, and that is working well for us so far.
Got it. And the second question I have is, in terms of understanding, just to mention that we might see shift of product from non-par guaranteed products towards par, and we have recently launched product towards par as well. Probably thinking on the same lines. So, wanted to understand the margin trajectory or the absolute VNB as well in the over the next course of, let's say, I understand you have already given guidance till FY23, but beyond that, would it become a linear or even because par, I understand, would be a much lower margin compared to non-par. How should one think about it in terms of aggregate margin profiling?
So, Neeraj, the way we tend to look at it is there is an overall savings portfolio margin, which will be driven by a combination of linked mix, par mix, non-par mix. At any point of time, amongst these, you will see some shift in mix. I don't think we can stand up and say that the mix is going to be stable at exactly some level over a period of time. The point that we are making very simply is that we are happy to take whatever is the margin outcome. Our approach is more on absolute VNB. And in a way, the more pronounced impact on margin will not be about par, non-par. It will be about protection annuities versus other parts of saving. So there will always be pluses and minuses. We are not at this stage seeing anything to suggest downside risks to margin. We think there should be stability. If at all, we would expect there to be a positive bias over a period of time. Given the fact that protection, retail protection may come back, once retail protection comes back, within protection itself, the portfolio margin can improve. Second, the mix itself of protection can improve. Third, persistency delivery can translate into some amount of margin improvement. And fourth, over a period of time, expenses also will contribute. So while there are possibilities of positives and negatives, on balance, we think there is the chance of a positive bias overall over the medium term with respect to margins.
Got it. So just on protection, given I understand some relatively smaller competitive entities or players are actually picking up in terms of lowering the retail protection pricing, and the market share gain have been happening at that side. How do you think about it now, and how sustainable is it, and whether it is impacting demand, or actually there is a shift between some share from the larger players to relatively smaller players?
So Neeraj, I would only point you to what we showed on the slide with respect to new business sum assured market share, where we have actually gained market share from 13.2% to 15.7%. I'm not really seeing any small player gaining in any fashion. There are one or two mid-sized players who are putting in more focus, and that is bound to happen. That's the way the business will operate. But I'm not seeing that diluting our position in any way or creating a loss in market position for us.
Got it. This is very helpful. Thank you so much, Sachin.
Thanks, Neeraj.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jayant Karote from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, two questions from my line. Between group term and credit life, which segment has grown faster in this quarter?
Jayant, we have not given the breakup in business between the two. What I can, however, say that both have grown quite strongly.
Okay. And sir, last quarter you had given a guidance that, not a guidance, but an indication that VNB growth will be in line with the industry probably going ahead. Where do you see that number settling at, and is there any number in your mind?
So Jayant, we had said that in the context of life beyond FY23.
Yeah.
But that is something, again, we have not given any number guidance with respect to what it can be. We'll see at the end of the year whether we are wanting to do that. But as of now, we are not giving any number guidance beyond FY23.
Sure. Thank you. And just one last thing, sir. On the EV sensitivity to interest rates, have you seen that move up steeply in the first half? Just calculated economic variance seems to be slightly higher. So the directionally, is that number moving up?
Jayant, we disclose sensitivities only at the end of the year. So at the end of this year, you'll be able to see it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Poddar from Nippon India Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Prateek. Hi, sir. So just one question, and you know, looking beyond FY23, see, in the last 18 months, we have had benefits of good pricing on the group term side, and you have had a wider product suite as well as a better distribution access to other banker partners, which now going into FY24, if you can just, or maybe medium term, if you can talk about what will drive growth for you on the AP side, not on the margin side, you've explained that very well. But maybe on the AP side, beyond FY23, what will be the real growth driver for you?
Prateek, you want me to give a sense on where all the growth drivers? Okay, so
yeah.
if I really look at from a channel perspective, you know, I already talked about a little bit of opening up, which is likely to happen from an IRDA perspective, in terms of adding more bank partners, insurance partners by banks. Here, you know, I do believe that as a company, over a period of time, we have been able to get this whole alliance proposition going, growing quite strongly. That's the reason why we see the 30 bank partners in a primarily a banker promoted company. I mean, this is quite unique, I would suggest. So that, given those experiences and an ability to tie up, I think the widening of bank assurance itself could be one big platform where we would like to grow. You know, I am not saying that all the banks will jump into adding some 9 insurance players. I'm not suggesting that. But I do believe that wherever the growth momentum for the existing players are not happening, we can make a meaningful proposition to them to say that at least add us as a 4th player. I think that is going to be inherent part of our strategy going forward. Second, on agency, that is an area where I do believe that we have done significant investments, including manpower, addition of agents, etc., in the last year or so. And as you know, this the business lacks the investments in agency because they have to come up to full productivity. So if you do that, you know, hopefully agency would grow from here on. It has been a bit of up and down depending on the base effect, but otherwise, secular basis, we do see agency contributing much more than what it is doing today. So that is the second channel. The third one is direct to consumer. This is an area where we do believe that we can make a huge difference. On one side, you have seen IRDA talk about Bima Sugam. On the other side, we do have our own assisted online channels and direct online channels, which are already contributing about 15% of our retail APE. And given the kind of customer base we have today, we do believe that this is a huge opportunity to go direct in terms of upsell and cross-sell. So widening the bank assurance partners, increasing the agency share further, and increasing the D2C share, I think this will be the medium-term growth drivers beyond 2023. This is how we have sized up our own strategy. So if I have to really look at long-term, I would definitely expect the agency to contribute at least 1/3 of our APE. That is broadly the direction in which we'll grow, you know, with banca continuing to stabilize and the other direct-to-consumer channel contributing much more than what they are doing today. Directionally, this is where the company will be going in terms of the growth drivers on the channel side. On the product side, now we have become completely neutral to customer and the channel preference on the product side. We are no more skewed to any particular product line, nor we have any preference to a particular product line. We'll just completely leave it to the emerging environment, market environment, or consumer preferences or channel preferences. We are happy to take the outcome. You know, that is the way we have positioned on the product side. So this would be the approach beyond 2023.
And just wanted to check, you talked about, you know, the IDA, adding more banker partners. Is there a margin of utility, from a margin of utility perspective, if a bank already has three partners, adding more, does it make sense for them in your view?
Yeah, so one extreme, let me answer first. It, you know, to me, when we discuss internally, it doesn't make any sense for banks to go up to nine at all. So they let me throw out their adding nine, because it will be a lot of chaos will be there on the shop floors, and that is not going to be something which is useful either to insurance companies or to the banks. But the on the other side, if you are looking at three becoming four or four becoming three becoming five, that will really be a case-to-case basis. For example, if some bank has got already three partners, and let's say the momentum is not happening with one or two partners, that is where I meaningfully see a play, you know, in terms of going and presenting to them, showing them the numbers, and show what we have done with the other 29 bank partners and ICICI Bank as well, and then show it to them and make a pitch to say that maybe they would benefit a lot by adding a fourth or fifth. I see a play only there. I mean, not really on a mass basis, people adding and our getting into every bank. That I'm not seeing that kind of a play. I'm just being practical about this.
Very helpful. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Pratik.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my question. Sir, just one on some of the exposure graphs.
Shyam, can you speak up, Shyam? I am not able to hear you well. Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, I can. Can you hear me
now? It's a little disturbed. Your line is a little distorted, Shyam.
Volume is okay, but now we are getting cut.
Just on the exposure draft, one on expenses of management, one on payment of commission. What are your initial thoughts? I know these are still exposure drafts, but is it going to benefit bigger players like you vis-a-vis smaller? Could it lead to consolidation? Just your overall thoughts, industry, and you know, what is your micro story there on both those exposure drafts?
Yeah, overall thoughts, we believe that any such reform-oriented approach is very good. We welcome it completely because this also helps us to structure the payments the way we want to get the best outcome rather than talking about some, you know, segmental basis or a micromanagement of, you know, what to pay here or what to pay there. That sort of gets completely overwritten by an overall limit. So that is a lot of operational flexibility from our perspective. Second, yes, of course, it is some larger players like us will welcome it because it's really beneficial to companies with a good expense ratio like us. Because if you look at our expense ratio, we'll be probably top two in the industry in terms of expense ratio. So naturally, it is beneficial to players like us. So those are my initial thoughts. Of course, at what level the expenses stabilize or commission stabilize, that we'll have to see. Based on the competitive dynamics. But definitely, the flexibility and the efficiency, the current stage we are in, it is beneficial to us.
But it's so helpful. Second question is on reinsurance supply. We have started seeing supply from a reinsurance perspective come back now that COVID has gone, and any chances that we will see very high price hikes, you think, like last year from them, or you think it's a little bit more normalized?
So the way I would look at it, Shyam, is to say that given our balance sheet capacity, current solvency, expected increase in sub-debt limits and expected shift to risk-based capital, I would be perfectly happy even retaining more on my balance sheet if there is not adequate capacity from a reinsurance point of view. So at least to participants in the market like us, it doesn't matter too much beyond the point what is reinsurance capacity. What is important is what is the price at which we are getting reinsurance in the context of the experience that we are seeing. And over there, at least our experience, we are very comfortable that the experience in the context of our pricing is consistent. So we are happy to retain more. We'll see where it goes. Not really too concerned about capacity from where we are.
Got it. So last data point, if I may try, is on, I think you called out guaranteed income contribution to APE in previous quarter. Is it like still around the 20% number or it's gone higher than that?
Sham, I never called out guaranteed return products in the mix ever. Not last quarter, not year end.
I believe there's a 20% number, sir, that we had actually called out in 4Q. And maybe my memory is wrong. 20% of APE.
I don't know. So we haven't publicly disclosed it.
Got it. Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nischint Javate from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Hi, Nischint.
Most of my questions have been answered. Just one, and this is one of the news articles a couple of days back about GST input tax credit, where I guess there was some investigation in the insurance industry. Just on behalf of the industry, can you kind of make us help us understand what really happened, and does it mean that you need to make any payouts right now or probably make any provisions for payouts?
So Nishant, you're right. This is an inquiry that is being carried out with respect to the entire industry. The context of the inquiry is about certain expenses and how GST input credit has been availed on that. As far as I understand, the entire industry and we are continuing to provide data and cooperation to the authorities as they are seeking. They will have to go through their process and assess whether whatever evidence we have of the activities that are carried out are suitable or not. We will wait for that process to conclude, and if necessary afterwards it may move into litigation. In order of magnitude or what it could be or even whether there will be any impact, I think it is too premature to call because right now it is a data gathering exercise by the authorities.
But have you paid anything right now to the authorities, or is it something that or provided for anything in the PNL?
We haven't spoken about any payments, but generally whenever there is tax related litigation or inquiry, and this is true in litigation as well, expectation is to deposit some proportion of the disputed amount upfront and then continue with the litigation, and eventually the decision of adjudication will decide whether it goes in our favor or not, in which case if it goes in our favor, we get a refund of whatever we deposited.
Sure. And then this kind of probably has, if you're making an advance payment, this kind of has some implication on the P&L.
It doesn't. Advance payment has no implication. Only when there is a substantive action does any implication on P&L even get considered.
Okay. So this you would probably, from a P&L point of view, consider as an advance payment.
That is correct.
Okay. Perfect. I think that was my question. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Manish Gupta from Solidarity Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So what I wanted to understand is that, the way we measure our progress is doubling of VNB between FY19 and FY23. Now, typically in other categories in insurance, what we see is that the experience of people in group term has been very, very poor. So, for example, if we see health insurance, the combined ratio in group policies is well over 100, meaning it's a loss-making proposition. Now, my question to you is that in life insurance, the true profitability is only measured over long periods of time when you make the adjustment on the EV. So, is there can you give some data, if you can share, about what your experience in group term has been vis-a-vis what your assumptions are? Because as we measure progress through VNB, we can end up reporting very good VNB when we book these policies, only to reverse it at a later date. So I just wanted to understand whether my interpretation of the accounting is correct and what your experience in group term has been vis-a-vis the VNB margins we've estimated in the past. Thank you.
Manish, a perfectly valid question. One should not look only at VNB. One should also look at movement in embedded value particularly within that, the operating experience variance and assumption change impact over a period of time. You will notice from slide 64 in our presentation deck that over the years, right from FY18 onwards and even before when we did the IPO disclosures from FY16 onwards, mortality morbidity variance has been consistently positive with the exception of the pandemic period. And this has been only possible because both group as well as retail and within group credit life and group term have consistently delivered positive operating variance. So from our point of view, at the level of pricing that we are operating and offering the products on, we are very comfortable with the loss ratios and the profitability emerging. Health, particularly within health, corporate health may be a completely different ball game from what you see in life. Clearly, at least from outside in, what I've seen of that and what I know of the life insurance industry, I have no reason to believe that for the significant companies, group terms should be a loss-making proposition. I can confirm this for ourselves. This has been consistently positive over the years.
Okay, thank you. And one more question is that, you know, because the accounting in life insurance is fairly complicated, if one was to look at accounting very, very simply, you know, how does one think about, from a shareholder perspective, what is the return on equity of an insurance company?
So this is really the tricky part. The problem is return on equity, I will have to associate it with the profit under an accounting standard. And given the Indian accounting standard today, the return on equity becomes a very distorted measure. So let me give you an example. If I'm selling 100 rupees worth of term life policy, under Indian GAAP, I may well have a first year P&L which is a loss of 200. If I were to account on an IFRS 17 basis, I may well have an answer where the first year profit is not a loss, but a first year profit may be 25 rupees. Now, between the two, how do I determine what is return on equity? That is the tricky part of it, which is why as a proxy to return on equity, what we use is return on embedded value. Essentially, what we are saying is that the embedded value, which is the pool of future profits, is like the capital which is supporting business growth, and the operating EV profit is the equivalent of a profit metric in that context, and that's how we are looking at the equivalent of return on equity. So an ROEV of a 16% to 17% does seem like a reasonable level for somebody like us to be operating on, and that is what, at least in the current accounting context, Manish, I would prefer looking at as a measure of return on equity. Of course, tomorrow if we move to an IFRS 17 basis, we may well decide that the EV approach can be junked and we can move with the financial statements itself and an ROE the way it would emerge from that as a true measure of profitability. But that to my mind is a little out into the future. For now, our view is the current framework of embedded value and return on embedded value is the closest substitute, if you will, to return on equity that we would consider appropriate.
But have you ever calculated the ROE on an IFRS basis?
Yes, we have. That's what I was telling you. That if with no new business strain, it's effectively no capital deployed.
No, I hear that. I hear you. But if you were to calculate your ROE today on an IFRS basis, what would it be?
IFRS is still, India has not started reporting on an IFRS basis, Manish. It's still another 2 to 3 years later. I gave you a representative information. But I'm saying that I don't have a capital, I don't have a loss in the first year at all, so there is no capital to be provided. So technically it is infinite ROE.
Okay, maybe I'll just take this offline. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swarnabh Mukherjee from B&K Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, thank you again for the opportunity. So a couple of questions. One is on the September new business monthly data that was released. What I had noticed was that for the group business, if I calculate the APE, generally for the top players, as well as I think for you, the group AP number was quite tepid. So if you could give some color on, you know, why would that be the case? Is there a base effect or something other in play, given that disbursals particularly have been very, you know, continue to be strong? And I was kind of expecting that the credit life portfolio would, you know, continue to be robust at least. So some color on that, please.
Swarnab, the group business has multiple parts. You have group term, you have group credit life, which are protection oriented, and then you have the group funds business. By nature, the group funds business is a very lumpy business. I don't think you can ever arrive at any conclusion on trends and patterns based on monthly numbers with respect to the group APE.
Okay, sir. So, I mean, the only trend that I picked up was that for all the larger players, it was slow. So that's why I thought that was anything to read at an industry level trend or anything.
So I would actually suggest, Swarnab, that I don't think there is any trend at all in that, if you look over a period of time.
Okay, sir. Sure. Another question, a big fundamental question, sir. So if I look at the persistency numbers, say the 60-month persistency at 5 months FY23, that should be a function of what your product mix or channel mix and customer mix was at 5 months FY 2018, right? And also maybe how they are behaving right now. Does it have to do with anything else to read into?
You're absolutely right, Swarnab. Nothing else.
Nothing else, right? So whether, you know, what would be the new business environment right now has nothing to do with that, right?
Not at all.
Yeah. That's all from my side, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Swarnab.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. N.S. Kannan for closing comments.
Thank you. We have answered all the questions. And in case there are any residual questions, please talk to our teams. Thank you so much for joining on a Saturday evening. Sorry to have bothered you on a Saturday. We just finished the board meeting, so we didn't have a choice. Thank you so much and have a great weekend. Bye.
Thank you. On behalf of that, we conclude this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.